Welcome to episode 212 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on January 8th, 2021. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. Today, Scott gets Ben to chat about some of the challenges he's encountered recently with moving files and folders around in SharePoint and some of the solutions he's found. Scott also talks about some recent challenges he's had when downloading files from Teams, and we wrap up talking a little bit about Microsoft 365 versus Dropbox, Slack, and Zoom. And that's another Friday. I have had a sad lack of motivation ever since New Year's. I'm blaming it on a whole sequence of events, starting with the fact that there was a holiday.
Yes.
And ending with a riot.
It's been a week. I'll leave it at that.
Yes. We are not going to get into politics other than we're in the U.S., and I'm sure you have seen the news about the U.S. It's a disaster.
It's interesting times.
Yes. We have, I hope you don't listen to this, we have a guy that's a little nutto in our Facebook group that lives in our neighborhood. Needless to say, some of his posts in our Facebook group for our neighborhood have been rather interesting over the last week or so as well.
Block, mute, do what you have to do to maintain your social mental health.
Yes, I shut it all down.
I've been using that button a lot this week. Like I haven't opened Facebook in a couple days, and I've found that to be super healthy. And Twitter is just like a good place to block and mute.
So I had some conversations going on Twitter about some stuff I'm dealing with Office 365. And I made the mistake a couple times of scrolling. Now it's like, open Twitter. Do I have a notification about a response to my message or a DM? Nope, shut it down. But I don't block everything or block people. I rather flag tweets as irrelevant to me, hoping that Twitter algorithms will learn what I care about.
Oh, that's because you're still using official Twitter apps. Yeah, you got to stop doing that.
Yes, I still use official Twitter apps.
No, no. Third party all the way. You'll never see an ad. You get the one true timeline, like an actual time-based, time-ordered like timeline.
Time-based timeline?
Yes. Time-ordered is far better than algorithmic.
Yes, but I should switch. Like, I have a bunch of third-party ones, and I use them at times, and for whatever reason, I always end up defaulting back to the default. I think it's muscle memory or something like that.
Uh-oh. Time for you to wake up.
Time for someone to take the cast iron skillet out of the oven because we had to reseason it because we had a bit of a food disaster the other night.
There we are. You probably didn't get into cloud engineering to spend hours manually sifting through layers of data or manually creating reports to understand and explain your Azure costs. Neither did the IT pros at ShareGate, which is why they built ShareGate Overcast. ShareGate Overcast is an Azure cost intelligence tool that reduces manually monitoring and helps you make cost-efficient engineering decisions. And it can help you lower your Azure bill. ShareGate Overcast scans your Azure environment daily and analyzes your cost data. It automatically identifies cost issues and gives you the insights you need to fix problems fast. Plus, with personalized cost savings recommendations, you can be sure you're only paying for the resources you need. Best of all, you can get ShareGate Overcast free. Find out more at ShareGate.com/ITPro. That's ShareGate.com/ITPro.
In other news,
your week has been an interesting week, right? So you're going on Twitter to look for responses to your Office 365 issue. What's your issue of the week this week?
Which issue of the week? You really want me to rant today, don't you?
A little bit, because when we're on a screen share together and you say, hey, can you stick around for a few extra minutes and you want to show me a SharePoint problem and think I'm going to be able to solve it for you, then we're in trouble. I know you've reached the end of your rope.
I did reach the end of my rope, and I am getting closer to, like, my rope has been lengthened and I'm still trying to climb up this rope that I reached the end of. So this is the biggest one I ran into this week. I had a client call me and say, hey, we used to move all these folders around. They move folders around in SharePoint. You can stop listening there if you want to, or you can keep listening. For their workflow, this works best for them. We have tried other things and I have not gotten anything else to stick. But we move files around or folders around. So they would click on a folder and click on move folder. And I have not seen this error before doing this with other clients where it essentially doesn't show you all of the sites you can move it to. It just shows you that library. So you can move this folder around within your current library. And then at the top, it says, it gives you some error message, and I can't remember what it is, but it's essentially, it says it can't move it to other locations. You click the little I for the information, and it says, please select fewer or smaller items to be able to move this to other sites, which is what they wanted to do, move it from one site collection to another site collection.
Yeah, I was going to say, specifically, you were trying to move folders between site collections. And it's
yes.
SharePoint site to site. It's not like going from a personal OneDrive over to, a corporate OneDrive over, even though that Correct. Would be SharePoint to SharePoint. Sometimes there's weird behaviors in OneDrive. Like you are SharePoint site to SharePoint site in Office 365. So modern SharePoint.
Yes, like /site/site1/site/site2. I'm trying to move it from site one to site two.
Yep.
So it said you have to select fewer items. This led me down the rabbit hole of, okay, what is this limit? Because we've done this before. Like this isn't something new. They've been doing it for 2 years. Did something change in their environment that they started storing a lot more files in these folders or a lot bigger files in these folders? Or what's going on? I found two different pieces of documentation. There is the typical SharePoint online limits documentation, which states in order to move folders from SharePoint site to SharePoint site, it has to be under 100 gigabytes of files. So this folder could be up to 100 gigabytes. It has to be less than 30,000 files. And you cannot have a single file that is more than 2 gigabytes in size. Okay, great. We should be under those limits. Let's go dig into this. What the heck are they putting in these folders? The folder was only 690 megabytes and like 160 files. So I kept looking. There is a support article, so support.microsoft.com instead of docs.microsoft.com, that states the limit to move a set of files is 500 megabytes. So I immediately have a contradiction of documentation. One article says 500 megabytes. One article says 100 gigabytes.
One is stated as limits, which typically limits are up to, but it doesn't mean you'll get that performance all the time.
Yeah.
Absolutely contradictory.
So it led to a support ticket, and support wasn't really sure what was going on, but I opened it anyways, hoping I could drive it up the food chain. And then I started on Twitter and I started at mentioning people. We've talked to a few people. We know a few people on the SharePoint team. And I got routed to one of the appropriate product managers of OneDrive and SharePoint. And he informed me, and I can link to all of this on Twitter as well. There's a whole Twitter thread out here about this, that the limit is actually 100 gigabytes. It is not 500 megabytes. So if you're seeing a limit at 500 megabytes, there's an issue. And that documentation needs to get updated. So the real limit is 100 gigabytes. I have confirmed that I'm hitting the limit of 500 megabytes because I can go in and start selecting like individual files. And as soon as I drop down below that 500 megabyte threshold in these site collections, all of my options light up to be able to move to other SharePoint sites. And I've actually been able to replicate this in 3 independent Office 365 tenants. Two of my clients and mine, the behavior is all the same. And the other bizarre thing about this behavior is that I have a whole bunch of sites. I have some that have been created from the classic template, some that are from the modern template. I've tried all of them. If I upload a folder with 690 megs of files, I've used the same folder for everything. I am able to move it right away. Upload it, finish uploading, quick click on it, click move. All the sites are there. I can move it to any site collection within my environment. Wait about 24 hours and try it again, and I'm limited to the 500 megabytes. So it's almost like it doesn't actually know that file size, kind of like SharePoint does a bunch of indexing on metadata in the backend. It's almost like there's some type of indexing that's going on that's indexing it, seeing the 500 megabytes, and that old limit is somehow still applying. And that's where I am right now. I have a support ticket open. I am in... Some of these conversations have now moved to DMs and Twitter, but support is looking at it. And hopefully I will have an update here within a week of what's going on and hopefully have it fixed. But I was able to validate 100 gigabytes should be the limit. So I should be able to do what I'm trying to.
Should be the limit, but doesn't work in three different places is a less than confidence-inducing statement.
Right. Well, and the fact that all of this seemed to work before, because the two clients' tenants I've tested this on both move folders a lot. They're both in the same industry. It's something about this one particular industry that they just like to move folders around, and that's how they track their work and who's working on what. It's super bizarre, because none of my other clients have ever moved folders around this much. These two do. So I know this has worked in the past, and something seems to have flipped in the last couple of weeks that is resulting in this bug.
You know, it's funny, like if you Google or Bing or DuckDuckGo around for this particular issue, we're moving things between SharePoint sites and the 500 megabyte limit that appears. One of the responses, at least in Google, it links over to a tech community forum post. And if you scroll all the way to the bottom, I started reading it. I was like, oh, this sounds very much like Ben's problem. And then I scrolled up and I looked at the username. It's like, oh, Ben is replying to this thread. It's like a 2-year-old thread, but Ben is just throwing gasoline on the fire. Like he's like, hey, I got this problem. What can we do about it?
Yes, that was a 2-year-old thread that I resurrected. Which, and maybe these clients have never actually tried to move up to a 500 megabyte folder before, but knowing their file sizes and what they do, that doesn't make sense, given what I've been working with these clients over the last 1 to 2 years.
Yeah. So you're with support, and it may or may not get fixed, or they may or may not be able to tell you why it doesn't work the way that it's documented to work. What's the next step there if that doesn't happen? Like, what are the alternatives?
My brute force approach.
I think it's interesting to talk through the brute force.
My brute force approach?
Especially because most people don't know how to reach out on Twitter to the product manager who owns a given feature within the product stack to get an answer back or potentially have that escalation with support.
Escalated?
Yeah.
Yes. So my brute force, and I'm actually, this is why I think this is relatively new. I'm already doing my brute force attack with another client, with the second client that has this issue. So I think this brute force approach sidesteps this issue because they were already having problems moving these folders around before all of this a year ago. So we created this brute force approach. Essentially, our brute force approach is to leverage Power Automate and a flow within Power Automate to move these folders. So I have we've added some metadata to these folders so they can essentially change each folder is for a specific job. They can change the state of the job to progress it from state 1 to state 2 to state 3 to state 4. When a particular individual is done, they go say, okay, this job needs to go to state 3. At 5 p.m., a flow kicks off, it runs, it sends an email to the appropriate team that is working on these files and says, hey, this folder, this job has moved to state 3. At midnight tonight, this is going to get moved to the appropriate location for state 3. So there's like a 7-hour delay in there just to help make sure people are out of files, they're closed, they're saved. Try to alleviate any pain that may come up there. And it adds this to a queue. And at midnight, Flow just keeps hammering on this queue. It'll go try to move the folder. It will get as far as it can. I have a timeout in there. I have try catches in there. If it fails at any point in time trying to move it, it starts over 15 minutes later and tries again. Starts over 15 minutes later, tries again, and it literally just keeps hammering on this. And I have had it where it takes 4, 5, 6 tries, and eventually everything gets moved over. We haven't seen any issues yet with like corrupted files or stuff getting overwritten or getting duplicated or any of that. It's been running this way for almost a year now. We may be doing this for like 7 or 8 months. It's an ugly solution. It's not a pretty flow to look at, especially when you're trying to account for all the different states and sites and conditions that they may have. But it has been successful for them. And the nice thing is then all these move over time, because the other problem that I have run into with trying to move large folders like this is, one, if you're doing it in the browser, you have to leave that browser window open. If you close the browser window at any point in time, it cancels the move. And a move in SharePoint Online is truly a copy and then a delete.
Yes. Yeah, it has to get all the way across.
Right. And it has to copy the entire folder before it does a delete. So if you interrupt it at any point in time, there's no good way to figure out where you've left off or to go try it again. And if you're moving a large file that's taking 40 minutes or something to move and you forget and you have to retry it, all of a sudden you spend 5 hours of your day trying to move this stupid folder because you kept closing your browser window or navigating to do something else.
Yeah, there's no RoboCopy resume there.
No.
There's client tools, maybe from like external vendors, right? You've got the ShareGates of the world and things like that, but then you've got client licensing to account for, and you've got to teach users another tool. Might have been easy back in the day when there was WebDAV and you just do open with Explore, but that wasn't going to help you out too much on a Mac. So like all sorts of like fun things to figure out there.
We've played with a sync client too, because the OneDrive sync client is the other one. Is okay, let's just move this, let's sync both locations and move it from one location to the other.
Drag and drop between them, yep.
Right, and do like a cut and paste or a move in Windows Explorer, let OneDrive sync it up. But what we actually found with that, especially with big folders, is if multiple people are syncing that, sometimes your read and write times on these files get really goofy, or one guy's lagging or isn't in the office. So you move everything and then he comes back into the office a week later and the sync client can't resolve those changes. And all of a sudden it recreates the folder in the original location rather than picking up the move from the other employee. So even the OneDrive sync client for moving large folders that multiple people are working on was just causing a bunch of issues.
Yeah, because one of the nice things about the built-in move is it preserves versions and history and also last modified time. So your LMT, right? And that's what's getting thrown off on the OneDrive side of things. Or you'd have the same problem if you downloaded the files to your desktop and then uploaded them again. Like if it's a business process that needs version history or things like that, you're only getting the latest version anyway. So not a great way to approach it.
Yes. Outlook add-ins are a great way to improve productivity and save time in the workplace, and Sperry Software has all the add-ins you'll ever need. The Save as PDF add-in is a bestseller and is great for project backups, legal discovery, and more. This add-in saves the email and attachments as PDF files. It's easy to download, easy to install, and Sperry Software's unparalleled customer service is always ready to help. Download a free trial at sperrysoftware.com, SperrySoftware.com, and see for yourself how great Save as PDF is. Listeners can get 20% off their order today by entering the code CLOUDIT. That's CLOUDIT, CLOUDIT, all one word at checkout. Sperry Software, work in email, not on email. So, hopefully, again, like you said, this bug will get fixed. Hopefully, it'll get fixed for everybody, too. They'll figure out what's actually going on.
Just for you, just your tenants. That's all you need.
Well, that's all I need, but I feel bad for everybody else. I'd like to see it fixed for everybody. Because I am here for the people, Scott. I'm about the people, not about myself.
Gotcha. Well, I think this one's going to be very much about you until it gets fixed.
hopefully it's... It seems like it's something at that global level that once they find it, they'll just roll that change or whatever causes this everywhere. And again, because of the conflicting documentation, I also don't know when that limit changed. Like there's just a few bizarre things about this in terms of it seems to have been working before, now it's not working. But like you said on that thread 2 years ago, people were asking about it. So at some point in time, it changed and maybe it changed recently and it's still rolling out across tenants. I don't quite have all the answers yet. But that has been some of my work this week. And then the other one was around content types, but that one I don't understand yet. So I'm not even going to... We won't talk about that one yet. But essentially, I had certain content types published that I have documents associated with them. And it doesn't appear like the document templates were getting published down to the site collections properly. And I don't know... I'm still in the middle of that one to the point where I don't know, other than it didn't work.
Other than you don't know. You need to just stop playing with content types. I think that's the key takeaway there.
You went way more granular than I was going to. I was just going to say, stop playing with SharePoint.
Oh, you could do that as well. I didn't want to take away your livelihood, but you know. It's a thing.
Well, my livelihood, I can transition my livelihood, right? Yeah. I can transition my livelihood to Azure.
Absolutely.
To Teams. I'm going to transition it to Teams because everything in Teams always works perfectly.
Yes. And except until, yeah. Yeah. You know, Teams is an interesting one. Like, if we're going to be ranty, I find Teams to be, like, it's required for my job. And I think it's required for lots of people's jobs. It is one of the most frustrating products that I work with every single day. And it just has so many rough edges that like fight me as a user consistently. Well, like yesterday, we were talking about moving files. So I needed to go and download a bunch of files from a team. Well, you would think like, I just want to be able to do that through the Teams client because it's got a whole files tab and right. I can multi-select and I can download. But you know, the one thing that I really want to do when I download a file is select the download location that it goes to. Like, that's what I want to do. I want to download with a save as and have that come through.
No.
And that should be the most simple thing in the world.
It just goes to downloads.
I understand. But it's a web app, right? It's Electron. Like, why can it not just like give me the Chromium download window and call it a day versus my entire thought process having to be broken to say, all right, I need to go into files. I need to find like the one or two files I need or the folder, whatever it is. I need to click the ellipsis or right click. And then I need to do open in SharePoint. I need to go into a SharePoint window, potentially re-authenticate again. And then from there, I can download and do the thing that I actually wanted to do. So it's four extra steps for me to get to what should have been like a one or zero step state kind of thing. And there's all sorts of just little things like that, that like go against the grain of what you as a user might want to do. Like the functionality is a good idea, right? Like, hey, you have files, you want to be able to download files. Not being able to select the location that you download files to, it always feels downright hostile.
Okay, so I agree with everything except the whole premise that you started out here, Scott. You should know by now, you are not supposed to download files because it results in duplicate files. That is why you can share files from within Teams and share a link to your file so you don't ever have to download it.
Well, in this case, it's grabbing PDFs so that I can turn them into Word and Excel documents and then take those and push them back up and share those out. Right. So starting with those static pieces of content, getting it to where it needs to be. But yeah, no.
So since this has turned into the episode in which Scott and Ben rant to begin their year, it goes along with this, and it kind of goes along with this whole 500 megabyte thing, the stuff we're ranting about. I was on Christian Buckley, does his collab chat. Yes. I think that's what he calls it. Mm-hmm. Or collab talk, one of those. It's the end of the month, essentially a Twitter tweet jam every month towards the end of the month. We wrapped up one in the end of last year, end of 2020. And the last question, he always has seven questions he puts out there and everybody gives feedback. I think the last question or the second to last question was, if you had one piece of feedback for Microsoft management, you're in a room with them, whatever, what would it be? The number of people that gave something similar to stop focusing on new features, fix the stuff that you have that's broken was astounding. And that was the same piece of feedback I got. And it goes back to this whole download thing and the 500 megabytes. And like you said, the number of quirks that frankly keep me in business with doing consulting. At the end of the day, I get why you need new features. I get why you have to continue to innovate and improve. But there feels like there is often a lack of polishing those features once they get released, to improve some of this usability. I know they still fix stuff. I know they slowly make improvements. There's a lot of bug fixes and issues that have been fixed. But there are times when I wish there was maybe a little bit more focus on, we don't need a new feature every day. we need some of the existing features that we use on a daily basis fixed better.
Yes. Yeah. Focus on quality is always a good thing. And I get it's hard. You know, you have these multi-layered services and they consume from all over the place. But I think with like the rapid pace of change and everything that comes in with that, then you got to be ready to go.
Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business.
Let's just talk about some of the competitors. Something like Slack or like Zoom feels like it is smoother and it works better. And I think sometimes it's because those companies have one product that they focus on. I mean, Zoom
absolutely
just does video. Slack just does chat. Dropbox just does files. And now you run into the issue of how do you make all of these work together? Because now you're relying on three different companies to have three different APIs that you can somehow all tie together to do your daily work. But the one task those apps do, they do it really, really well because they still have a little bit of the new feature stuff because they need to. Everybody has to continue to innovate, but they have a much narrower focus. So I also feel like they do a much better job at fixing issues a lot quicker and just making that experience smoother. I mean, it's a little bit of a trade-off, right? Of do you want integration? Do you want it all in one platform? Do you want it all secured? Because there's a lot of benefits to being in Microsoft 365, but there are times when it's like, I just wish Teams would work as smoothly as Slack does, or I just wish my files would be as easy to manage in OneDrive as they're in Dropbox. Things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's two different approaches, right?
It's tough, but I think you nail it when it's a product that tries to do everything versus products that are singular in their nature. And I think a lot of that, like, you can figure out how prevalent that is just by the way Microsoft has to constantly remind people that to be successful with Teams, you need to spend a lot of time on end user training and adoption.
Yep.
And some of those other things like Slack, like, it might have a weird UI and it, like, feel a little strange, but I guarantee you can give it to people and they'll just kind of like figure it out, right? Like, good, sign in, go back and forth. You know, I do a file, I do a phone call, whatever it happens to be. Like, that stuff just tends to work, and, you know, it works just fine. There's no weird, like, hey, why is my mic changing volume on me automatically and I don't have a control for it? Why is my camera rendering green through the GPU today? Like, how do I shut off GPU rendering in Teams? Oh, I can't. All that stuff just kind of goes out the window.
Yeah. Although I will say phone calls in Slack, like phone calls, video calls in Slack.
Definitely not its first use case.
To me, Slack has bordered on more frustrating when it comes to video calls and phone calls. I feel like Teams works better for that. The chat is another story. But it is. It's an interesting scenario to find yourself in because, kind of like we said, I love the integration with Microsoft 365 and that all of that is automatically tied together for me. And we've talked about it before. It's a little bit of pros and cons. That's why it sometimes can be hard to compare something like Teams to Slack or Teams to Zoom, because you really have to compare Teams to Slack plus Zoom plus Dropbox.
Mm-hmm.
It is interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
There are definitely times I wish that there was a little bit more focus on fixing stuff that is broken or doesn't work well.
Like just an itty.
Yeah, just itty a tiny bit for
little
me.
A little bit, that's all.
Scott, did you get an M1? We can wrap it up with that.
I have not gotten an M1. I'm waiting for you to get an M1 and tell me how amazing they are.
I am so close.
after this morning when you're getting ready to reboot all your crap, just so your microphone works.
Dude, that was weird.
Your microphone's not going to work on an ARM chip, but whatever.
My microphone will work on an ARM chip. It should work on an ARM chip. I just need a USB-C dock.
You say that now. Is that all?
That works on an ARM chip.
Yeah, because those all work great.
So I'm actually on the fence. Like, I kept talking about the MacBook Air. There's also a part of me that just wants to try the Mini. One, because the Mini is a little bit cheaper. But I want something light to like go sit on the couch with, because the 16-inch MacBook Pro gets really, really hot on my lap.
Yeah, well, the Air or the 13-inch M1, neither of those will get hot.
Right. So that's why I'm still leaning a little bit towards that, but we shall see. We'll also see what Apple announces this year. Maybe I'll change my mind if they have something new that trickles down in March or April, or rumors start circulating.
Give it a couple months. I mean, like the spring event, it should be coming, right? March or April. It's not too far away.
Exactly.
At least have iPads for you.
Because you know what an M1 is going to lead to? So here's my theory about how this is all going to break down, which is why I'm a little worried. Because of my own self-control. The M1 only supports one display, right?
Kind of, sort of, unless you do the Mac Mini.
Right. So let's just say I do an Air because I want something on the couch. And then all of a sudden I like my Air way more than my 16-inch. So I decide to sell my 16-inch and just try using the Air for my daily driver. And then I have two monitors. And I'm like, well, I can't use two monitors. So to order, instead of two monitors, maybe I should go buy a 49-inch ultra-wide screen. So I get two 27-inch monitors in one monitor that I can plug into my Air, especially since I don't know if that bug fixes rule out. I know there was an issue with super ultra-wide displays in the Air and the M1. But Apple did say that was a software issue they were going to fix.
Yeah, you could do that. Or you could just get like a nice like 43-inch panel or... You know,
oh, there's some really nice monitors out there.
I'm still loving this 32-inch 4K. Like, it felt massive at first, but now that I'm used to it, like, totally awesome.
I think Dell has a 43-inch.
Dell 4K. Does have a 43-inch 4K monitor that looks amazing. It's got picture by picture, it's got picture in picture, kind of all the things.
Well, and it does a 4 times picture by picture, right? You can essentially have 4 separate panels on the one.
Yes. Yep.
Display.
Yep. Yeah. Or you, I mean, you could do the same thing with, you know, just window management and moving things around. But the issue with 43 inches is if it goes on your desk, it can't be at the same distance as your current monitor, right? Like if I reach out my hand, like my monitor is right there. Like 43 inches would have to be back another good, like, 8 to 12 inches.
See, I bet I could come close. Mine is, if I reach my hand straight out, because this is where my main monitor is, I'm still 2 or 3 inches off my panel. So my monitor already sits probably about 2.5 feet away from me.
Yeah. You need a deep desk. And then you also got to think about like potentially an arm that can support that. Like, I don't know what the weight of that 43-inch panel is, but you know, you might need, it's not undoable, right? But you might need a new arm or something. Cause I imagine you'll want to adjust it up and down or side to side occasionally, depending on where you are in the room. Cause you'll find other uses for it as well.
I don't know how much I'm going to adjust a 43-inch. Bigger than my TV in my office.
Well, you're either going to be adjusting a 43-inch or you're going to be adjusting your body a lot, right? Or it's going to be a panel that's back far enough that you don't have to do either of those things.
See, I think I would go back far enough that I'm not having to adjust much.
Until you have that panel in front of you, though, you can't know. So then you should go ahead and order one. You know what? Order 2 just to see how it works out.
With my Alexa's telling me I have something. Oh, Alexa told me I have focus time. I'm supposed to focus.
All right. Well, I'll let you go focus then.
Yes. Focus on buying new toys and a 43-inch monitor and an M1 and all of the things.
Yes, that is the one.
I need to get focused on work so I can actually make money so I can buy those, since this week has been a complete disaster. So go enjoy your day, Scott. Enjoy your weekend. Hopefully this episode wasn't too ranty, and we will talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
All right. Thanks, Scott.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.